Welcome to Not Terrible.
I'm Jess Hooker.
And I'm Mary Graham. This is episode 38 of the Not Terrible podcast. Today we're discussing this season's book club selection, Everything Happens for a Reason, and Other Lies I've Loved by Kate Bowler. Bowler tells of her journey with an early age cancer diagnosis and how she grapples with the reality of her situation. We talk about our thoughts and opinions on the book. Not Terrible, a field guide for the hopeless optimist.
All right, guys, welcome to our second book club discussion, where we will be covering Everything Happens for a Reason and Other Lies I've Loved by Kate Bowler. Kate Bowler is an assistant professor at Duke University, and she is also the author of Blessed, A History of the American Prosperity Gospel, and she has another book coming out soon, too.
Yeah, I just saw that. I think it just out, or it just came out.
Oh, okay.
It's just coming out.
On its way?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so we'll put that in show notes when we know what that book is, too.
Mm-hmm. So here, I think introducing this, Jess and I read this book, both of us independently, last year. And then when we started talking about it, we realized, oh, yeah, like there's so much in this that we need to spend some time digging into it. So in the preface, Kate Bowler introduces kind of where she's going, and I think this for us kind of sets the tone for our conversation. She says, married in my 20s, a baby in my 30s, I won a job at my alma mater straight out of graduate school. I felt breathless with possibilities. Actually, it's getting harder to remember what it felt like, but I don't think it was anything as simple as pride. It was certainly plain and simple that God had a worthy plan for my life in which every setback would also be a step forward. I wanted God to make me good and make me faithful with just a few shining accolades along the way. Anything would do if hardships were only detours on my long life's journey. I believed God would make a way. And then she says, I don't believe that anymore. So this whole story that we're following of hers is lots of really bad things happen. And she starts to wade through all these like very common everyday things that we say to each other in response to tragedy or hardships, and kind of peeling back the layers of those and seeing what's actually true, what we know in life, what we know in faith, and realizing that so many things that feel comfortable for other people to say are actually damaging and not true. So I think for different reasons we loved this book. I think for Jess, who, and I don't mean to speak for you, but
no, go ahead.
For your journey through
yes,
religion and church and mm-hmm. what you grew up experiencing versus now mm-hmm. is kind of what resonated with you.
I think it did. And I think that, and Mary introduced me to the prosperity gospel just in conversation. And I realized in a cult-like church that I attended that there was a lot of that. I don't think that they would have identified as that. I don't know if any church identifies as that, mm-hmm. but that was a lot of when you behave in a way that God prefers, then good things will happen to you. And if you don't, then bad things will happen to you. And that's definitely the message that I received growing up.
Yeah. In the book, Bowler describes that. She says, there's a branch of Christianity that promises a cure for tragedy. Mm-hmm. It is called by many names, but most often it is nicknamed the prosperity gospel for its bold central claim that God will give you your heart's desires, money in the bank, a healthy body, a thriving family, and boundless happiness. If you're faithful, those things will happen. And any result that is not that means that you don't have deep enough or strong enough faith. And that is against what's actually in the Bible, but we have come, I think, especially in America, to this idea that everything is available to us. All the world's happiness and security and money and blessing is available to us if we just believe enough. Mm-hmm. And that's not what the Bible says. Mm-hmm. So Kate has done a lot of research on that idea, spent time in churches that believe this. And that's what I think her doctorate or her graduate work was in.
Yeah.
And so then when all these bad things start happening to her, it makes her evaluate not only the studies that she's done for school, but like how this directly relates to her life.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where this book goes. And for Jess, it was about the church experience that has been so cult-like, and just anything could be possible if you believed. For me, I resonated with it more just at looking. I didn't have a bad church experience growing up, but starting in my early 30s, I started questioning the things I had always believed or been told, and filtering it through the gospel, or filtering it through the Bible that I was now learning for the first time on my own, as opposed to just letting other people tell me. So my point of view was filtering actual ideas or beliefs through what I'm learning in the Bible, and this is where it kind of all came together for me.
Yeah, I was... How interesting that her own life happenings, she was able to draw from years and years of research and study and actually make this a part of her book, and how so many people that she met and began relationships with through that study came back to her at this time and were reinforcing the things that they believed through her illness.
Yeah.
That was why, I mean, it just made for such a beautiful book.
Compelling story. Yeah. And I think I know what I tend to read and what readers are drawn to. Her research book was probably, you know, it was good and important, but it didn't get the attention that this book got.
Right.
Because it didn't have a personal story, probably.
Right. That's what I was thinking. I was like, I can't imagine if she were able to share the stories that she was able to share in here. Like, she shares the tornado story at the beginning of the book in regard to two very well-known, which I didn't know very well. Like, I know Tammy Faye Baker in terms of...
Everybody knows Tammy
Faye. Yeah, in terms of that. I even have a t-shirt that looks like she wiped her face off on it. Have you ever seen that?
No.
Yes, it's beautiful. But she tells a story about another a television evangelist where his wife talks about there was a tornado coming and she went out on the front porch and she prayed and prayed and prayed and said that she literally prayed the tornado to turn away. those stories that she shares about that, I was like, oh my gosh, if you could just have a whole book of those types of stories too. Oh my gosh, just the stories that people, and I want to be very, very careful in what I say here, because actually I'm not going to be very careful. I'm not a believer, and I don't believe that God, God doesn't cater to the prosperity gospel. That's my belief. And if you believe otherwise, I'm happy for you. But
I'm not.
Mary's not. But I'm still new to it, to where I just want to be friends with everybody.
And I want to be friends with no one.
So, but I could read a whole book just of that, of the people, mm-hmm. and their stories of faith in those terms. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
But also how she I feel like she kind of dropped a bomb on us halfway there when she says that she's a Mennonite. I mean, she wasn't a Mennonite by birth, but she was a Mennonite.
She grew up in a Mennonite
community. And
I
married.
Think her husband
she makes that, like, I went to Mennonite summer camp. She went to a Mennonite church, I think. Yeah. And she said I've been a part of many, many Mennonite weddings.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then including her own. And that there's so much, nobody loves to suffer together as much as the Mennonite faith.
Yeah, and I'm not familiar at all with that, like, branch of Christianity, if that's what you would call it.
No, yeah, me either, for sure. But when she said suffering together, I always think the way that Catholics suffer, and we're very dramatic about our suffering.
You love the lament.
yes, but the way that she writes about it feels very different. It feels like there is a support system, a real support system within that community that when something bad happens, yes, it's bad, but you are not going to do this alone.
Yeah. This is not related, but sort of. So I follow her on Instagram, and she posted a picture of her husband and her son recently. And I like zoomed in on her husband. I was like, well, he doesn't look like a Mennonite. I don't even know what that means, but like, I didn't know if he was going to have like some crazy facial hair, just right. like a different outfit that, yeah. no, he looks like a normal, just normal white guy. But I was just like, Mennonite.
But then he introduces himself and he says, my name's Tobin. And Jedediah. Then you go, yes. And then you're like, oh yeah, that's probably
and he pulls
right.
up on his buggy. I don't know. Like that's very generalized
jokes. Sorry, guys, but that's where we go.
All right, I want to read something to you.
Okay.
And
I can't wait.
Yeah, I know. Gather around, children. I want to read something to you, and then I think you're going to have a strong reaction to it.
Okay.
Kind of just thinking through your life. So am I reading this
no pressure.
For dramatic effect? Yes, I am.
Okay.
All right, so Bowler is in graduate school at the beginning of her book, and she's researching the prosperity gospel when her arms start to go numb and unmovable. So she is going into these, like, doctors can't figure out what's wrong with her. Her arms are just, like, flopping down at her sides. So it's just very dramatic. And she's young, and she's healthy, and she's not had these problems before. And so she's going into these churches that believe strongly that if you have enough faith, you will be healed from all physical illness, and she's not being healed. So here's what she says. In a spiritual world in which healing is a divine right, illness is a symptom of unconfessed sin, a symptom of a lack of forgiveness, unfaithfulness, unexamined attitudes, or careless words. A suffering believer is a puzzle to be solved. What had caused this to happen? As I walked around with slings or braces on both arms, I heard whispers and caught looks, some sympathetic, some disapproving, some gravely concerned. In the small church where I did my research, I knew I was loved. I was prayed for. I was ministered to. But when, week after week, I returned with some droop in my arms and weakness in my hands, I thought I saw their lips close and their arms cross, and I felt like unfaithfulness personified.
Ding, ding, ding. Yeah. If you're new to Not Terrible, you can go back and revisit some of my conversations and talks that I've had about Addie. And some people, which now I know what their faith base is, have said that this is a punishment. Me being born or having a daughter born with a refractory illness means that somewhere in my life I have screwed up so royally that my daughter is paying for my sins. And then pair that with, I grew up in a church that encouraged that belief. That I grew up in a church where God was a punishing God. So anything bad that happened to me was a result of my own poor behavior.
And you deserved it.
And I deserved it. I had it coming. And I'm not going to lie, I still struggle with that a lot. Even to the point where if Addie has a flare-up or a cluster of seizures, I go back and reevaluate my behavior since the last flare-up and the last cluster. And and I have to actively go, no, we're not doing this.
Yeah,
we're not doing this.
That.
Yeah, mm-hmm. We're not doing this. But that's kind of how my brain's been trained all these years. And we know that untraining a brain is hard work.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, when she talked about that and that people look at you and think that, I've been very fortunate in not having the experience of anybody ever saying that to my face, saying it directly to me in person. It's always been behind the protective barrier of direct message and social media. I can't imagine what I would do. I'm actually a little bit nervous. I have a lot of built up aggression. So if somebody somebody said that to me in person, I'm not sure what they'd catch other than these hands.
Booyah.
Yeah. She, when she visits that throughout the book, I don't know. I felt strength grow for me personally, and in her actually having the information and the knowledge that she's grown up with through her college career, kind of grown up with these people. And even they kind of turned on her.
Right. She says, I know I was loved. I was prayed for. Like, they they valued her. Mm-hmm. And they still thought, like, oh, what have you done?
Yeah.
What have you done?
Yeah. Like, they're, yeah, we'll pray for you until we've decided that not only did you not get your blessing or your miracle of healing, but now we're going to stop praying for you.
Right.
Because you did it.
And that's, we think you deserve this now.
Yeah. Mm. I was curious, too, because she talks about, I can't remember the time frame exactly when her diagnosis happens. Her first diagnosis, when they finally decide and
with
understand.
The cancer?
No, with her overly loose joints. So that's what happens. Mm-hmm. They find out later that she was just born with overly loose joints, and it causes pain, and it's hard for her to do things. And
she just has flare-ups.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
But then around that time, too, she, or previous to, she has a miscarriage. And it's a very short part of the book, but it was very, for somebody who hasn't experienced a miscarriage, it was like all within, I want to say like a 12-hour period. Like, she's going to go in and have a surgery or do something for her, for whatever the symptoms are that she's having currently that end up being overly loose joints. And they said, well, is there any possibility that you're pregnant? She says no, because they'd been trying for so long.
Mm-hmm.
Then she gets a positive pregnancy test. And within 3 hours of being home, the miscarriage happens.
Hmm.
And I was just, oh my gosh. And already knowing the premise of the book, like, that's a wow. And that they had struggled, or were in the process of trying to get pregnant and had struggled.
Yeah, so that, like, the book, I think we've described it before, is that she gets a stage 4 cancer diagnosis in her early 30s. But on top of that, once you dig into the book, like, she's just, there's so many layers of hard things that have led up to this cancer diagnosis that feels like her body has failed her, or you recover or you finally find an answer and then something else happens. So I don't know if it's just me personally, because I feel like one thing gets handled and then 15 more fall apart, but I found hope in her story of just, like, she's funny. She's a funny writer. She has very, like, dry sense of humor. So, like, she's telling you these hard stories and there's still moments where you're going to laugh, and then she survives, and not like survives like suddenly she's all healthy, but like she makes it through a day and then she goes on to the next day. Like, her resilience in the face of a lot of things that she doesn't have answers for felt encouraging to me. Even though we leave at the end of the book and she's not cancer free, like, she's still sick.
No, you know, and the upside is that they do get pregnant and they do have, they do have a healthy child, but that pregnancy literally with the loose joints tears her body apart. She says, like, mm-hmm. her just parts of her body are just hanging.
Oh.
But another, Mary and I were just talking about this before we turned on the microphones too. We were talking about, to everything there is a season and a time to every purpose under heaven. And I thought, that's so wild. Like,
did you just write that?
No, I think it's from the Bible.
It's a song.
It's a song? Is it really? No, it's not.
Yes.
To everything there is a season and a time to every purpose under heaven. Is it really a song?
It's a good.
I think I know the to the every. It's like a Garfunkel song.
Yes. A And I thought you were ironically quoting it and then just kept going. And
no.
So I got.
No, but somebody says it to her, I think, in the book. Somebody quotes it to her. And I was like, that's actually really nice because it is like they tried for 2 years and mm-hmm. things happened. And there is like there God's timing is perfect. Mary just said that earlier today. But when she's surrounded by a community of people where it's isn't it like do you call that seed faith?
I don't know.
Were you planting a seed for growth later? Like, I'm doing this good deed now so that later it returns. I get a return, you know? Like, I know that sounds weird, but I think that that's what it is.
I don't know. I know obedience is doing the hard things that are put in front of you because you're being obedient, even if it hurts.
Yeah.
So... But I don't know if that connects to...
Seed faith?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, like what you said kind of sounds like it's still for a selfish motive. Of just like...
Yeah, so I don't know which
yeah,
if seed faith
know.
Is good or bad. All right. We'll have to look into that. We'll get back to you guys.
On an upcoming episode. I'm looking for that song. I got distracted. I don't know. I thought you were going to sing to me.
I thought it was scripture.
I mean, it could be. I don't have the Bible memorized.
Let me look.
Can you say it again? I'll just Yahoo it.
Nope, I'm looking.
I'm trying to bring Yahoo back.
What?
Yeah.
Are you serious?
I'm just kidding. What did you say? What was it?
No, now I want to find it in the book.
Just say it.
Okay, I will. To everything there is a season and a time to every purpose under heaven. I really thought it was scripture, you guys. I'm just learning.
Ecclesiastes 3:1 is for everything there is a season and a time for every matter under the sun. That's like all the different versions. NIV is there is a time for everything and a season for every activity under the heavens. What is the song?
You guys. So I was right.
Here we go.
Is it Simon and Garfunkel?
It's the Birds.
Oh, well, I'm not even.
We have to cut this out
to
probably.
Every day turn.
Yeah, that's what
to
I thought you were
every
singing.
Season. Yeah. Maybe the Birds were inspired by, what book of the Bible was that?
Yeah, they're singing, by the way, they're actually singing a
Bible verse.
Yeah, they're singing scripture, and they just turned it into a hit pop song.
Yeah. Wow, look at the things you learned during book club.
I wish I knew what, I think that's from the 60s.
It
turn from by the Birds.
That's funny. That was not in my notes to make that point.
You were making a serious point, and I was just, I thought it was a joke. I'm
and
sorry.
We were both right.
We were both. I was more right, though. it comes from the Bible. Proceed. Okay. So she has the sun. Things are still hard. Like, she feels like, kind of like what I read at the beginning is she's married, she has a baby, she gets her dream job, all these things are falling into place, and then stage 4 pancreatic cancer.
And this
no,
was the
colon
cancer, mm-hmm. Yes. And this was a long, hard path to get a doctor to listen to her and to do the CT scan and say, okay, we were wrong. We tried to tell you it was 1,000. Somebody told her it was her gallbladder. She's going to have her gallbladder taken out. I mean, she was eating antacids like they were candy, like just so much debilitating pain, and nobody was helping. There were no doctors that were helping her. They were prolonging it only to find out, obviously making it worse and making it stage 4. Lord knows what would have happened if they would have done something about it and done the CT scan before they did and could have caught it sooner. I don't know. I know colon cancer is very aggressive.
Yeah. I know that. From personal experience, like when you hear someone that gets diagnosed with cancer, you think like, you just went to the doctor, you told them something was wrong, and they discovered cancer. And the reality is, I think for most people, it takes a while to figure out, hey, this is cancer, and they think it's a million other things, and it never, like, it feels so, that feels so crazy to me to think that, like, you have cancer. Why is that so hard to figure out? Why do
Why
you think
that
it's
not the first thing you check?
Yeah. I don't, but, like, I don't have any medical experience or expertise at all. So, like, it just from, you know, like, my TV medical knowledge, like, why don't we just know immediately that it's cancer? That right. seems outrageous to me.
Well, I am down on Western medicine usually just because my attitude sucks towards it. And I'm always thinking of how are we going to make money? And unfortunately, our medical care system kind of drives that way. And yeah, so it's like, how many things can we test you for when we could rule out the worst thing first? And that seems
and work
like
our way down.
Yeah, that seems like the better option, but that's not usually how it goes.
Yeah. So then after that happens, we learn stories of her family's reactions. There are some that are helpful. There are some that are hurtful, and she kind of wades through. And I think it's important for readers to hear from somebody who's struggling and see both sides of what's helpful and what's hurtful and there are people that love her. They're not like strangers that are out to get her. There are people that love her, and their reactions are sometimes helpful and sometimes hopeful. So hearing her point of view of what actually people want to hear is good. It kind of the book takes us on this journey of wading through her faith and the mortality, like coming to terms with the idea that she could die in her 30s and the anger that she has about that and the questions and just leaving her son without a mother. There are parts in the book where I laughed. There are also parts where I cried because it felt too close to home. Like, I'm a 30 something with some daughters that the reality that I could one day be sick and leave them too soon is heartbreaking. But she tempers it well with humor too. Like, there's never a point where you give up hope, even when you're hearing hard things. Do you want to talk about the end of the book?
Oh, I'm going to touch on one thing really quick.
Do it.
That another thing that for me touched a chord. I recently had someone come into my life and wanted me to try a different type of therapy for Addie. Something a little more unconventional. And we were standing in my foyer, and she said something about asking the Blessed Mother Mary to pray for me also. And I said, yeah, you know, even in my times that I have felt the furthest away from God, I've always felt like I could, like, as a friend, like, hey, Mary, can you do me a favor? You know, like, I never prayed to her, but I would ask her to pray for me also. And she said, well, of course you've always felt so close to the mother, because who else would understand you watching your child suffer like she would? And I was like, oh my gosh. And there are a couple of moments in your life that you feel it in your heart, and I did in that moment. Hmm. And I felt like
understood.
I felt understood, and I felt that God was going, hey, what you've been doing while you've been away is okay. And in chapter 6, Kate talks about her Sunday school teacher, Carol, and she said something to Kate. Carol was diagnosed with cancer, and she said, upon finding out her diagnosis, I've known Christ in so many good times, and now I will know him better in his suffering.
That's some deep faith right there.
Yeah. That's I believe that would be hashtag faith goals. because oh my gosh.
Yeah.
And that was that when I read that the first time, I remember I went back and I read that paragraph many times and just thought, yeah, that's, I would like to be there someday. Okay, so, sorry. But the end of the book, yes.
Yeah. I think once I finally got to the end and saw the two appendixes.
Yes.
I think that's how you say the plural of that.
Right.
Like, that was the point. I was like, oh, everyone needs to read this book.
Yes.
Do you want to tell us a little bit about the...
Sure. So, Appendix 1 is absolutely never say this to people experiencing terrible times. This is a short list. So, these are things that you think that you're saying to be kind or to relate or to show compassion for people, I think. But for the person who is struggling, that's not how they hear it. So whenever you do the, well, at least,
yeah.
So now you're comparing there.
At least you're still alive.
Yeah. Oh, well, cool. Thanks. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I
think without even knowing the list yet, if we, each of us went to our Facebook page
yeah.
and just mm-hmm. scrolled down
yep.
a little teeny tiny bit, we would see, these are very common, like, without thinking, wrote phrases. And I've said some of them before too.
Oh,
like
yeah.
this is not like
yeah and I didn't you don't mean a mean spirited no. but you have to for a split second before you say something like that just put yourself in that person's shoes, and it's really hard because you don't have that perception. And like she said, well, when somebody says, well, at least, well, now you're minimizing what's going on in their lives, and that's the last thing you want to do.
Yeah.
There's a lot of good ones. I like that this one when my aunt had cancer. So this is personally another one of my favorites, is when someone says, oh, okay, your daughter has seizures. Well, when my dog has a seizure, I hear what you're saying, and I'm sorry that your dog has seizures. However, I don't even know how to finish that sentence.
No.
But that's what I want to go, please don't do that.
Mm-mm.
Please don't do that. I know that you love your dog and I love my daughter, but let's not go there.
And it's not the same.
It's not the same, but I know that you feel like you have something to share that might help me.
And I think she talks about this in the book too, about us humans do not know how to talk about mortality or death or suffering without feeling uncomfortable. And we have, I don't know the history of that, but like we people do not like to talk about or admit that we're all going to die. So we immediately say something trite because mm-hmm. saying anything real makes it real for us too.
Mm-hmm. So I think we have to touch on the obvious one when everybody says everything happens for a reason. And Kate says, the only thing worse than saying this is pretending that you actually know the reason. So she said she's had hundreds of people tell her that there's a reason for her cancer, whether it was because of her sin, her unfaithfulness, because God is fair, because God is unfair, because of her aversion to Brussels sprouts. It doesn't matter, but there's actually no reason. When someone is drowning, the only thing worse than failing to throw them a life preserver is handing them a reason.
Yeah. And, like, it's weak theology, because sometimes the reason is we just live in a broken world and bad things happen.
Yeah.
Like, sometimes we can't make deep, meaningful sense of horrible things. And I know our brain wants us to. Like, it makes us all feel safer if we can come up with a reason, because then we could avoid that if we know
right.
that reason.
Right.
But that's just not the way it works.
Yeah, human nature is to rationalize things away.
Right.
Yeah. So in Appendix 2, she says, here are some... She did not say that. I don't even know how you would spell that. In Appendix 2, she says, here are some suggestions of things you can say, which these are things that I have personally used.
I like the title. Give this a go. See how it works.
That's true.
See, because like even in the midst of like teaching or hard things, she's being sarcastic, which I enjoy.
So I'm going to start with the first one because it's the most important one, because it's about food. I'd love to bring you a meal this week. Can I email you about it? I think that that's big because you don't put somebody on the spot and say, hey, I'm going to cook you ravioli. It's coming tomorrow. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to be open-ended and know that there's lots of other people that probably love this person and they're cooking meals too. And so just be open to whatever they need instead of, oh, okay, you're a planner and you need to put it in your calendar and you need it. No, too bad. Right. It's not about you right now.
Mm-hmm.
Can I give you a hug? I personally am not a hugger.
Nope.
But if I know that the other person is, I'll go through it. I'll endure the hug to make that person feel warm and loved. And you know, a lot of times these people are in hospitals, or people are in hospitals, or they're going through things where they don't have a lot of physical touch. And the power of physical touch when you don't have physical touch very often. Oh my gosh, it's huge. It's huge.
And as some, like, for me personally, I'm not a hugger. I don't enjoy, like, I'm not very physical. When someone kind of busts through and gives me, give me a hug anyway, sometimes I'm just like, hey, I actually did need that. Like, or, I mean, there are times where personal, like, a hug is not appropriate here. Or, like, you know, understanding body signs. But sometimes... yeah, it just feels okay.
Yeah. And I think this is another important one. They're all great. There's a handful. I've only read a couple from each part, but silence. The truth is that you really don't know what to say, and it could be awkward, and watching someone go through a tragedy is awkward. Watching someone be in pain is awkward. So you could just sit there and be there. You don't have to say anything. Your presence is enough sometimes.
I think that's good, because sometimes the most powerful gift you can give someone is time and just like your undivided attention. Yeah. And that doesn't mean you know the right words, but if you're just there. So she wraps up not with nice, clean answers. She still has cancer. She's still struggling. She still has questions. But I like this for in chapter the chapter called The Object Lesson, she says, what would it mean for Christians to give up that little piece of the American dream that says you are limitless? Everything is not possible. The mighty kingdom of God is not here yet. What if rich did not mean wealthy and whole did not have to mean healed? What if being people of the gospel meant that we are simply people with good news? God is here. We are loved. It is enough. All right, so we're going to take a break. When we come back, we are going to discuss some comments and questions and just observations that we've collected from listeners, other people that have been reading the book along with us this season. And then we will tell you how to get a hold of, follow, read Kate Bowler, because we do highly recommend it.
Thanks for joining us for the second half of our book club episode, Everything Happens for a Reason and Other Lies I've Loved by Kate Bowler. The second part of this episode, we're going to be taking your questions, talking about your comments, how you felt about the book. I think we're all over the map on this.
Yeah, first of all, I expect people to always agree with me. And second of all, I expected people to love this book. Mm-hmm. And we have had people say, yes, we loved it. But we also have people say, nope, not a fan. Mm-hmm. Do you want to share one of those with us?
This is from one of our followers on Instagram. I'm here with the unpopular take. I do not like this book. I'm quitting it just a few chapters in. I keep waiting for it to be about the stupid things Christians say to people who are suffering, waiting to be challenged to love more effectively and to be more thoughtful with words. Instead, I can't get past her literally and entirely unbelievable interactions with healthcare providers, which I agree with. That was a lot of it. And it was, as I've said this before, someone who's been in the trenches of Western medicine, sometimes it is shocking and appalling.
It was almost like caricatures of people that you didn't feel could actually be that dumb.
And how could this possibly be happening to her at every single interaction?
Yeah.
It seemed like it anyway. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And to be totally honest, she does not have a fresh or practical take on the why me God question. I have witnessed and been a co-journeyman through so much suffering, and I'm tired of people discussing this question as if they are the first people to ever ask it. I'm also very tired of the question. It doesn't mean she's not allowed to wrestle with it, but I just can't bring myself to keep reading about it. It feels patronizing.
Ooh, that's a feisty.
I know, I liked it. I liked it a lot. It also made me question some things about what did I like and what did I not like about the book.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It felt a little bit unbelievable. Yeah, like every interaction with the with healthcare providers and doctors, that I just kept reading in hopes that there was gonna. I mean, like I was hopeful. I guess it didn't. It didn't bother me. It's life.
Right. I think, and as someone who starts and stops lots of books pretty ruthlessly if I do not like it in the beginning,
yeah.
I understand why this reader or this listener didn't keep going. I would say if she would have kept going, though, I think she would have found some of the things that she didn't like mm-hmm. kind of resolved in
sure
in other ways. But if you, especially if this person has lots of, she says she's... witnessed and been on lots of journeys with people that have been sick. So if you have an extra sensitivity to that,
mm-hmm.
You don't have to keep reading a book that is, you know, angering you so much. So I would say, I think at the end, she answers some of those things or tackles them in a way that I haven't heard people say before. But I also, this is not something, a topic I read about often.
Right, right.
And I don't have a lot of life experience with, like, the suffering of illness and health care-related things.
Mm-hmm. I appreciated that, yeah, she did. She found help, and things kind of went her way, but it wasn't tied up with a neat little bow and a happy ending. Like, she still has cancer. She's still suffering.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying that I like that part, but I'm just saying that's the realistic part of it, is that, yes, she found help, but even when you find help... It's not a cure. It's not the answer.
Yeah. And the reality is, even if it was tied up with a nice little bow, her life isn't tied up with a nice little bow. Like,
right.
It's still, there's still going to be more stuff ahead.
Mm-hmm.
Another review we had, this is from Mama Poulston, which is my sister. just saying that. She said, I gave this a big thumbs down, so I'm looking forward to hear what you guys think. I don't know. And she didn't say anything more about that. But I also know my sister's perspective is a little more, like, she lost a child. Like, there's a lot of different emotions that she has tied to people that are sick
mm-hmm.
and that I maybe don't have firsthand.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that has a lot to do with it, because my sister has wrestled with, you know, like, why me and why God? Like, why would you take a child from me? So... maybe we love this book because our perspective mm-hmm. isn't the same as someone who has been intimately
right.
let down, maybe.
I don't know. It kind of gave me, for a person, like I said, who's dealt with numerous doctors, asked a lot of questions, prayed on it, screamed on it, yelled at God about it. It gave me faith that this is eventually going, something good could happen for our family and our situation and our Addie. I don't know what it is, but I guess that's maybe a part of the reason. I mean, she reached far and wide looking for help and for answers and even financially
mm-hmm.
needing it. I guess that's why I continue to share our story in hopes that we're gonna connect with that person that's going to be able to help her.
Mm-hmm. So A. Thomas 54 commented, I read this book back in the summer. I jumped in with zero acknowledgement of what I was getting myself into. Fast forward to finishing the book at 2 a.m., sobbing and fighting the urge to wake up my family and hold them in my lap until the end of forever. The line, "We're all terminal," it resonates over and over again in my head. Mm-hmm. And then she said, followed by Bowler's reply to her question, "How do you stop?" You just stop. You come to the end of yourself, and then you take a deep breath and say a prayer and get back to work. I think that felt hopeful to me, too, in a story that doesn't have all the answers, and knowing that human suffering, so our suffering, no matter if it's healthcare related or not, is often, we don't know what's next, and that sometimes can feel defeating, but sometimes it can be hopeful too.
I think there's a lot of hope in not knowing. I mean, you have that choice to be hopeful in not knowing, or you can do the opposite.
And I think you get to some days pick up the hope and some days you pick up the despair. But I think as long as you don't get stuck, maybe.
You don't get sucked into the despair.
Yeah.
Yeah. Equal parts.
Yeah.
It's about balance.
I think that's a good way to wrap this up. So Bowler says, you come to the end of yourself and then you take a deep breath and say a prayer and get back to work.
All right, we'll see you guys on the next episode. You've been listening to Not Terrible with Jess Hooker and Mary Graham. Connect with us on Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter at Not Terrible Podcast. Visit us at notterriblepodcast.com for show notes and additional content. You can sign up for our newsletter for bonus episodes and podcast extras. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast provider.
When you subscribe, leave us a review. We'd love to share it on the podcast, like this one from Angel1172, who writes, I love the range of topics discussed on the show. It makes me look at things in ways I haven't before. Plus, Jess and Mary have the most soothing voices. They're so personable and real, it feels like another little circle of friends every time there's a new episode.
Not Terrible is recorded in conjunction with the Off the Air podcast. Recorded in the Front Room Studios, this has been a Waco production.